You are listening to Kubernetes Bytes, a podcast bringing you the latest from the world of cloud-native data management. My name is Ryan Wallner, and I'm joined by Bhavin Shah, coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. We'll be sharing our thoughts on recent cloud-native news and talking to industry experts about their experiences and challenges managing the wealth of data in today's cloud-native ecosystem.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. We're coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. Today is January 11th, 2023, and I hope everyone is doing well and staying safe and, in this new year. Let's dive into it. Bhavin, how have you been? I know I'm jealous of where you were. Why don't you tell everybody where you were, because they'll be jealous too, I think.
Yeah. First of all, Happy New Year, Ryan. Happy New Year to all of our listeners. Hope everybody had like a great Christmas break, great holiday break, and are now recharged and ready to kick some serious ass in 2023.
There you go.
Before I start to talk about my travel things, did you make any New Year's resolution? Like,
apart from me losing weight again, I do that one every year.
So. Yeah, same for me. Like, hopefully, this is our first video podcast, right? This is the most weight we have on, and then as we progress, losing weight.
Yeah, if you go the other way, we'll also notice, but which is a very possibility. I did make goals, personal goals, honestly, external from. Work and technology. Yeah. Honestly, we do this so much that when I make sort of goals and aspirations for personally, they're all having to do with getting away from technology. So for me, it was fulfilling sort of my adventurous side, right? So to your point, you like to go to national parks and travel all over the place. I've been sort of doing a lot more off-road motorcycling lately. I know I talked about a couple trips I did last year, but I had set... and I've already booked 3 trips. For June to August, and even November, there might be a 4th one. But as sort of goals for me to work towards to sort of like get more fit, experience those places. A couple of them in Vermont, one's in South Dakota, another one's in New Mexico.
So, South Dakota, wow. Okay.
Yeah, the Black Hills of South Dakota. Also known as Sturgis, but it's not that event. it's actually an off-roading mecca, sort of like the equivalent of Baja California for sand riding. Okay. Is sort of Black Hills is really good dirt riding, so I'll be going there. Anyway, I've made those goals, and I'm trying to check off a bunch of them to feel fulfilled outside of work. Not to get into like deep philosophy on our first episode back or anything like that.
This is the time when we can talk about these things. I think today people will listen to it if you talk about it in February. Like, okay, we already did a dry January.
Yeah, exactly. not dry. Anyway, how about you?
Resolution wise, I think I definitely want like this podcast to grow. So like. Yeah. Get more listens. I do have some professional goals that I set for myself this year. And then from a personal perspective, do more trips that are outside the US. Now that people might not know this, but I'm on an H-1B visa, right? So I'm getting that shit figured out. So once that's done, I want to travel outside as well. So maybe a couple of trips outside. So that's my non-professional goals, I guess.
Awesome. I'm looking to go. Looking forward to going to Amsterdam. It has been a while since I traveled internationally, mostly because of COVID, and my family hasn't. So I'm actually bringing some of my family this time around. It'll be fun. It'll be like a work, and some people say don't mix work and pleasure, but I'm going to do both this time around in KubeCon. It'll be a good time. Looking forward to it.
No, I think before I got married, right? At these trade shows called VM Worlds and a couple of others, they did these spousivities events where you travel with your spouses and then they get to do all the fun stuff while you're working in the booth or working at the conference. That sounded a pretty cool
idea. Send you selfies from the fun things while you're sitting at the booth talking to customers. That's not fun. Customers are great.
Yeah. No. The break trek was good. Went to Puerto Rico, had a lot of fun there. Loved there the 80-degree
anticipation weather. Must have been killing our listeners.
Yeah.
You mentioned it first thing. You didn't even say where you went. Yeah, anyway, Puerto Rico.
No, Puerto Rico was fun. Cozy. Yeah. Because of some weird weather over northeast, I think my flight, the return flight got canceled by a day or got postponed.
Not surprising. Have you been watching the airlines lately? Yep. I mean, did that surprise you at all?
Nope. But like, since I was in Puerto Rico, I didn't complain. I was like, okay.
I'm stuck in Puerto Rico. Oh no. I don't feel
that. And then I had to come to like 20 degrees weather. But then New Year's was again like that weekend was good. Went to Cape Cod with a bunch of friends for a couple of nights. So that was my break. How about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I mostly spent it with family. I think we had 11 people here, 4 dogs at one point for several days, which is, I call it sort of the twister, chaos, whatever you want to call it. I just accept it. I used to try to resist it, and it just, you know, you just have to accept the chaos and you'll have a lot more fun. So it was great to have everybody around. You know, we haven't been able to really do that consistently. Yeah. So I'm grateful to be able to spend it with family. And then we went and did some, there's a zoo that does like a light show in Mendon, Massachusetts, which was kind of what my daughter loved it. And then we went and saw Disney on Ice in Providence.
Nice.
Over the break, which, you know, I know nothing about ice skating, but it was very impressive. Just like the acrobatics and it was intense. And also, there's a, you know, I think it was Dunkin' Donuts Stadium, or I don't know what the Providence Stadium is called, but they, you know, when you fill it with like thousands of little princesses, basically around 4 years old, it's pretty funny to watch it, right?
And have Frozen playing in the background, like that song from Frozen.
And also they sell beer there. It feels like you shouldn't buy beer because you're just like surrounded by, anyway, it's this whole thing, but it was a lot of fun. Then we spent some time in New York with the rest of my family. And basically it's one of those breaks when you get back from your break and you feel like you need a break from your break.
That's why we have a long weekend this weekend, right? Like Martin Luther King Day weekend, that's just a break from all the breaks.
You have off Monday? No, I'm just
kidding. I do.
I don't know if I do. I have to look.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay. Anyway, we've been blabbing enough. I'm sure those of you listening want to hear what's really going on. So we have a really cool episode for our first episode. We have Michael Guarino, who is the co-founder and CTO for Plural.sh, talking all things unified application deployment with Kubernetes. And we're going to have him on in just a bit. But before that, we do want to tackle a little bit of news. It has been a little slow, just because of the nature of it being a break and things like that. But there's a couple things we want to talk about. The first one I'll talk about is in Kubernetes 1.26, which I think I believe we talked about a little bit before the break, but there is the alpha release of cross namespace storage data sources. So you were able to do this inside a single namespace, basically reference a PVC from another PVC and import its data. You do that across namespaces now. That's alpha, and we wanted to talk about that a little bit. Then there was a really good article that I came across when I came back from break called the 8 CNCF projects for cloud native persistent storage, and this is a good overview article on Container Journal. I think there's a lot of good stuff that comes out of here, but talks about a lot of the projects that probably we've mentioned and have guests on, like Rook and Longhorn, and even some that I didn't actually know about, which is pretty surprising, I feel like, when talking about storage. But you know, there's a couple on there that really are kind of focusing on things like databases or immutable data management and those kind of things. So anyway, take a look at that. We'll put it in the show links. I always monitor, I don't know about you or our listeners, but I monitor Reddit a lot. I don't actively participate all the time. Sometimes a lurker, but there's always a thread going about persistent storage or file and block storage in Kubernetes, because, you know, I feel like people are still, you know, we've been living it for a while, but there's still a lot of people just coming to this mm-hmm. world of, like, you know, being able to want to run and ask the right questions about how they're running data services and data intensive workloads and applications. So January 1st didn't take long. A new thread went up called the best distributed file and block storage for Kubernetes.
Ooh.
Now, you'll find a lot of different opinions, of course, as you always do on Reddit. But, you know, I would say the as far as the favorite goes that I've been seeing, there's a lot of mention around Longhorn, which, you know, consistently it's just people just being like, I'm happy with Longhorn. I'm happy with Longhorn. And that's great for them. I think there's a lot of good stuff going on over at SUSE. And I know we've talked about it on the show before.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone else is also mentioned, you know, who we work for, as well as, you know, the Cephs of the world and everything. But if you're new to this world, is, you know, these types of threads, I think, are enlightening. It also is a great forum for you to, like, ask really simple questions, whether those responses may be ones you want to hear or not.
Yeah, take it with a pinch of salt, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we'll put that link there. I thought that was pretty fun. And then there was just a new to me file system, not new in general, JuiceFS, something I haven't come across and mentioned around the Kubernetes space, JuiceFS in Kubernetes. I just, the name caught me. So yep. Great job, you know, marketing people over there. I don't know why it's called JuiceFS. Maybe someone can comment about why. I won't get into it, but we'll put a link to that and how it's used in Kubernetes. And I will hand it back over to you.
Thank you, Ryan. So I don't know if it's a slow week or I'm just slow this week, but yeah, I just have one article.
I wonder that myself too.
So I just have a funding round for from our cloud native ecosystem. One of the observability vendors, Chronosphere. I don't know how.
I've always said Chronosphere, but yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah, they picked up additional funding. So what they did was they did a Series C a year back, I think, 14 months back, and then they raised or did an extension to the Series C round. So raising an additional $115 million, bringing the total valuation to $1.6 billion, which is a huge number. So I think when they did the Series C, the original one in 2021, they were a $1 billion company. They were a unicorn. They added more money to the bucket or to their bank accounts, bringing the total amount raised to $343 million and the valuation to $1.6 billion. So congratulations, everyone at Chronosphere. Hopefully you have enough runway for the next couple of fiscal years as we go through this tumultuous times, I guess.
Almost as much as the Mega Millions jackpot, right?
Yeah.
Was it 1.3? You could almost buy a Chronosphere. That's how much money it is. I feel like I was just thinking about this, and I know I talked about it before we jumped on this podcast, but mm-hmm. I feel like we could almost do an entire spinoff of you talking about crowdfunding. And it could be like 10 minutes of you talking about crowdfunding. Anyway, I just want to put it out there. And if anybody's like, yeah, I really want that, let us know. Because I think, Bhavin, you know, you might be onto something there.
I would have a lot of fun there. Yeah, yeah. Just doing it for, again, I can talk about non-cloud native ecosystem companies as well.
I love it.
But I can definitely do cloud native ecosystem.
great. All right. Without further ado, let's get Michael on the show and talk about Plural.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Michael, it's great to have you here on Kubernetes Bytes. It's actually the first episode back from the new year for us, so we're excited to have you on and talk all things, you know, Plural. So why don't you do a quick introduction for yourself and for everybody listening or watching and what you do.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Definitely appreciate the opportunity. So I'm Michael. I'm founder and CTO of Plural.sh. We're a company that makes it easy to deploy a large number of open source applications on Kubernetes. It's focused primarily on the big three clouds, AWS, GCP, and Azure. But for that, I've been an engineer at a number of different fairly well-known tech companies. I spent time out of college at Amazon. Then I worked on Vine, actually, at Twitter, when Vine was a Twitter acquisition, until its cancellation in 2016. Mm-hmm. Then moved to a startup in New York City called Frame.io that does video collaboration SaaS. It has actually been recently acquired by Adobe. And then I worked for a little while at Facebook as well. So, you know, a wide variety of engineering expertise. And throughout that time, I had operated a lot of complex open source infrastructure and different environments. You know, Facebook has its own bespoke infrastructure. Frame.io was much more of a standard AWS shop. Vine was actually all AWS. And then Amazon was a combination of AWS and actually old legacy Amazon infrastructure as well. So, a lot of what we're building up Plural's informed from that by that prior experience.
Gotcha. So, thank you, Michael. That was a good intro for your background, right? You gave like a quick one line description of what Plural does, but then if we have to dive into it a bit further, like what is Plural? What challenges is it solving? Like why is the deploying open source apps on Kubernetes hard today? Like, can you walk us through that journey and like the problem and the solution?
Yeah, so a lot of the genesis around Plural was just kind of me looking at the Kubernetes landscape and realizing that if we roll back the clock, say to 2016, 2017, when Kubernetes was new, just the task of running Kubernetes itself was a challenge. And so there's a lot of technology that's been built for the provisioning of Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. And that has actually matured, I think, to like basically complete maturity. You can go into Amazon, you can easily provision an EKS cluster. It's going to be very, very low cost. Amazon is going to do all the hard work for you. Kubernetes is effectively a commodity. And I think what's now happened is the hard work around Kubernetes has moved up the stack a little bit to the application layer on Kubernetes. And so if you think of what actually happens when you want to say, you know that there's an open source project out there that you're interested in. Take Airbyte as an example. I want ETL. I don't want to spend $100,000 at Fivetran. Do it. I want to use Airbyte open source and have a very comparable experience around it. But then if you go to the process of actually running on Kubernetes, you start like basically going down the rabbit hole. You need to learn how to use Helm. Helm's a little bit weird. Then you need to know the details of an actual Kubernetes deployment. Like what's the difference between a stable set? What's the difference between a deployment? How do I actually manage it? You have an upgrade. You have to handle upgrades. So like all those new versions of Airbyte, you constantly have to test, maintain, tweak for your infrastructure. It's going to be different on AWS versus GCP versus Azure. Mm-hmm. You'll have the details of Kubernetes on the cloud. So like IAM permission, pre-provisioning for workloads is very different between clouds, for instance. Oh, yeah. So there's a lot of app-specific like intelligence that you need to have to be able to run a lot of these things. And it became very clear to me that is itself like a very, very complex problem that is not actually being appropriately solved by a lot of the people focusing in the Kubernetes world, which is really focused on like getting the control plane working. So what we do at Plural is like basically if you take a bird's eye view of what we're trying to do is we're trying to basically automate what if you had hired an SRE to like deploy that Airbyte version, what he would ultimately do. And what he's going to do is he's going to set up a GitOps environment. He's going to generate, like he's going to write a lot of infrastructure as code. He's going to like figure out how to use the Helm chart. He's going to figure out some Terraform code to actually provision that and get it deployed in your cloud. What Plural does is we have a catalog of all the Terraform and Helm needed for deployment of all these applications. And then we just code generate it into the Git environment for you. And then we have a console that we've built that allows you to do all the management of the application once it's actually been deployed. So that includes things like dashboarding, so you can see the health and reliability of the application in real time. There's runbooks for more complicated operations around scaling. So, scaling a database up and down is a fairly tricky thing. Adding a replica, all that can be done in a very graphical runbook with all the contextual information you need in terms of metrics and everything like that. There's also log aggregation just built from the start. We use Grafana Loki for that. And then the upgrading flow. So when we publish new versions of each of the applications, we're going to test it for you. Then we publish it into our canonical catalog, and then all the clusters that you create if you deploy one of our instances of the console, it will subscribe to that catalog, pull it down, and actually execute the upgrade, all the Terraform and help needed to perform it. You don't end up getting burdening yourself with that long-term upgrade maintenance as well, which is like, I think actually probably the biggest like total cost of ownership that comes with the management and application.
I feel like Bhavan and I have seen a lot of effort, especially this past KubeCon in Detroit, around really sort of solving that complexity. You said Kubernetes is a commodity, right? I think we agree with that for the most part, right? There's still obviously, you know, shops who want to build things themselves, want more things, and that's fine. But I think there's a lot more going on in sort of usability, user experience, application, you know, you know, that side of things. So it's really good to hear sort of this sort of take on, you know, sort of a automated virtual SRE, so to speak, in many ways.
And I think your description helped clarify a few things, right? Operators, if you do a quick Google search on what Kubernetes operators are marketed as those automated SREs or software SREs for your applications. But there are these other things that operators can't really handle, and then there's a discrepancy between how different operators functions. So having something like a catalog of applications that can be supported and run actually helps solve real customer problems, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And we use operators all the time, actually. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of applications need to provision Postgres. We use this a lot of Postgres operator to provision it for us instead of RDS, just from it seems like a better default because it's going to be cheaper. And a lot of these Postgres instances are not tier zero Postgres instances. So like cheapness should be the preference, in my opinion. It's not like there's not an either or here. Like you can definitely use both. But if you were to use an operator to say distribute Airbyte and then try and hand it to someone, you still have that same learning problem. So their onboarding experience, they're going to have to learn how to use operators. They're going to have to learn the details of that CRD and all the tweaks of it. Mm-hmm. That's actually very complicated for a lot of people. A lot of our users are still like, frankly, kind of unfamiliar with Git. So are they going to get to that situation where they're going to be able to use an operator too? Like it's not actually a buy. Like there's a long step of onboarding to get to that level of maturity in a lot of cases. And there's a lot of people who want to have an open source application and not pay that cost. So we still want to be able to serve them.
Makes sense. So, I mean, it's one thing I'm noting there is that sort of a lot of individuals don't even know Git, right? So you have definitely a certain type of user. Maybe this leads into my next question is, you know, I read that, you know, Plural sort of works out of sort of a workspace, right? And for that type of user or just your typical user, maybe you can help us break down, you know, what exists within that workspace? What what does that actually mean, right, to the end user?
Yeah. So like I said, like what we're trying to do is generate the resources that competent SRE would have generated. So the workspace is going to be laid out like all the applications that you're wanting to deploy. Say I'm deploying Airflow and Airbyte. There will be a top level folder for Airflow. There will be a top level folder for Airbyte. And then within that, there will be a Helm chart for the deployment of the Airbyte Kubernetes resources, and then a Terraform module as well for potentially the need for provisioning cloud resources. In Airbyte's case, the cloud resources that are provisioned is actually an S3 bucket for storing logs. So Airbyte stores its logs into object storage. And then that can be heterogeneous in different clouds. So for instance, in Azure, they don't have support for Azure Blob Store. Yep. You know, so you have to figure out S3 compatibility. We have a lot of stuff that does that. But they really are just plain Helm charts and Terraform modules. So you can actually add additional Terraform. A very common case is actually adding VPC peers. So you deploy it into a cloud and into a VPC, and then you want to be able to connect to adjacent VPCs. Another theoretical thing you could do is swap the database. So if you didn't like that Zalando Postgres opinionated setup, like you can just create an RDS instance, have the Terraform right there, put a Kubernetes secret for the password of it, and then reconfigure your Airbyte Helm chart to use that RDS instance. It's a very natural, like if you're capable enough to do that, you should have everything you need to be able to do. One additional thing that I should mention about the workspace is secret encryption. So anything GitOps, there's always a challenge around managing secrets because you could easily like, you know, put a database password in a file. You don't want that file to be in Git where everything is Git. So we basically re-implement a project called GitCrypt, which you or your viewers might be familiar with, but it effectively you can specify files to be encrypted into the Git index. So when it's pushed, it'll just be an encrypted file on GitHub.
Okay.
And that just works natively with the CLI, and you don't really even have to think about it. If you have the encryption key for the repo, you'll just be able to edit everything in plain text.
Makes sense. And now I know you said that Perl generates a lot of this, right? So maybe give a sense of, you know, can someone go ahead and modify these things, or does Plural have to know or sort of about the application? Or maybe this is more of a question around, can I BYO A, right? In my own application.
There are some guide rails, especially around Terraform, which is much more difficult to merge. But it's effectively a similar process as if you've had to deal with any other code generation tools. Like Kube Builder does a lot of this, actually. Kube Builder generates a ton of Go code, and then you have the capability to edit it. But there's usually very clear surrounding comments around the stuff that, like, Kube Builder is very, very noisy about. This is what we're going to be generating for you, and don't touch it. There's a similar approach here. So, like, in the Terraform files, we have, like, very clearly marked manual sections where you can add additional variables. Okay. You can add Terraform files in addition to the ones that we create, and we're not going to trample them or anything like that. With Helm, it's actually very, very easy because it's a YAML blob. So we can actually merge the YAML blob together in an intelligent fashion. It doesn't, like, your updates are not going to typically collide with that in a way doesn't make sense. So there is
a decent amount of flexibility. I mean, that's always a question that comes up, is like, I want things to be easier, but I also want to touch it all, right?
The other thing with that is, like, you expose that capability to people and you create the possibility that they break things, right? Sure. Like, and like, you don't just create it, you almost make it inevitable because and having Git in place is really crucial there. So you do make a customization. If you were to break something and then come to one of us and say, hey, like, this Airbyte installation doesn't work anymore and I have no freaking idea why, at the very least, I can go down through the Git history and see what you did and help you out. So that's another really important thing around the use of Git in the system to make the support process a lot
and
easier.
And hopefully roll back fairly easily then.
While going through the documentation, right, one of the things I noticed is for every template, when I run the plural build command, it generates all of these files in a specific directory, so a specific Git repo. Can I have multiple applications that are being tracked as a single entity? If I had a complex app with, let's say, a Postgres database that is deployed through plural as well, and then an Airbyte and something else like KubeCost on a Kubernetes cluster, can multiple applications be part of the same repo, or do I need a different repo for each app?
Yeah, basically the mapping is like a cluster has a single repo. Okay. So, and then the cluster can have many applications.
Okay.
So, our production cluster, actually, we use Plural to deploy Plural, and the production cluster actually probably has like 30 applications in it.
Okay.
A lot of them are just like how we dog food our catalog and test them. We use a lot of the stuff that we have in the catalog actually just for the operation of our business. Like, we use Superset for our visualizations and a Looker. We use Airbyte for all of our ETL stuff. And they're all in the production cluster. But that's how the mapping works at the moment.
As a follow-up, is there a way to sort of, you know, a lot of Kubernetes clusters are shared and like tenantized, right? Are those like branches basically in Git, or how is that managed if like two teams want to use the same cluster?
That's one thing that we don't really support the best right now. The main problem is like operator conflicts. So if you had already deployed the Zalando Postgres operator and then we redeploy it and we don't have like a good way of knowing it, then they're going to start thrashing together. Yep. Same thing with ingress controllers. Same thing with Circ Manager in theory.
Yep.
So that's one thing that we haven't like done. We're still trying to figure out if there's like actually a viable way of doing it because that problem is so difficult to solve.
Sure.
But like, my personal opinion is that mode of operation doesn't really make that much sense anymore. Like, having like a single like company-wide cluster, I guess you could sort of argue it's resource efficient. But if the process of provisioning a Kubernetes has become so easy that it's a commodity, why don't you just create a lot of different Kubernetes clusters and give limited scope, like guaranteed physically separated scope of resources to individual teams?
Yeah, and I think the reality is we ultimately see a blend of those two concepts, right?
Yeah.
Most companies don't just have one giant, in early 2017, everybody wanted to do it that way, right? I know I was at a shop that wanted to do it that way, and we wound up going the other way, and that was really expensive because we ran on AWS. Besides the point, we wind up seeing this sort of blend where you have a handful of clusters, and maybe there's a couple teams working. I could almost map in my head sort of the concept of sub-modules. You could have a sub-module per team or something like that in there. But those types of things, I think, are, as an SRE, you're used to dealing with different teams anyway. But I also think that the concept, those collisions that happen with operators, things like that, sort of a Kubernetes problem, right? When you really break it down.
Oh, no.
It's not really a plural problem.
I guess it's sort of a Kubernetes problem because it's hard to give, the reason those operator collisions become really big is because they have cluster wide access.
Yeah.
So if you had an operator that was scoped to a subset of namespaces versus another subset, maybe it'd be a little bit easier. We've been building some degree of support for this. The use case I think makes a lot of sense that's similar to this is, and we have a customer that's asking for it right now, is they have, they have a very opinionated way of setting up Kubernetes for security compliance. And it's really, they have it's Kubernetes with a specific AMI for the worker nodes that has been hardened, quote unquote, beyond what AWS does. They have some security software that is injected as agents and stuff like that. And then they probably also have their enterprise APM logging and everything like that.
Sure.
And so being able to build on top of that makes a ton of sense for us. Mm-hmm. You could technically layer that onto a Kubernetes cluster that we normally provision with our customized setup. It's possible, but going the other way is just easier for the user. The other thing in our case that's a little bit different is what you're deploying is they're just applications. You really shouldn't have that much opinionation on how Kubernetes works underneath the applications. It's just the implementation detail of how we've got created multi-cloud portability for the applications. But they could very easily, you could very easily just have an instance of Airbyte, an instance of Airflow deployed in plural land in your cloud infrastructure. And the real only concern is making sure that it has network access to whatever it needs to communicate with. There shouldn't be a huge need to be very precious about exactly how Kubernetes looks underneath, as long as it works and it's operable and we're doing our job of making your life of using those applications as easy as possible.
Yeah, I know. As long as consistency is key, right? The whole idea around GitOps, anyway. Yeah. So I know we've run into it in sort of our Bhavan and I's world and storage when we talk about things like disaster recovery and backups, those types of things. What do you draw the line on what's an application that should be and not? But it is opinionated, so it is it still is going to fall on that team. I want to switch gears a little bit and just talk about sort of which sort of platforms are supported, right? So things EKS, AKS, can you bring your own? How does Plural work in those worlds?
Yeah, so we have first-class support for all the three major public clouds, so AWS, GCP, and Azure, and we always use the managed control plane in terms of the Kubernetes flavor for those clouds. Okay. So it's EKS for AWS, GKE for the GCP, and then AKS for Azure. We actually have support for Equinix Metal, weirdly enough. We built that a while ago. And we're working on some others. What we really want to add is a low-cost provider. So something like SIBO would be kind of cool. So there's a lot of people who, they just can't afford a full AWS Kubernetes deployment, which, the minimum cost of that is really is about $200 a month. So they would want to use a tiny open source application and maybe pay $50 to $100 a month, but not the full $200. And that's totally reasonable. And the only clear path to that would probably be to use SIBO or find some way of doing it with shared infrastructure or something like that. So
when you talking about smaller sort of deployments like that, does that also, when you talk about major clouds, does it include EKS anywhere or sort of the private like, is it still the same control plane, right? Do you support those sort of hybrid deployments too?
Yeah, we haven't played with EKS anywhere yet. Yeah. But that would be kind of interesting. We should definitely work on it. We haven't really done a whole lot with true on-prem deployments. Everyone who've come to us have wanted to just deploy in a vanilla cloud environment, and we haven't had like that very huge demand yet for the on-prem stuff.
Gotcha. Okay. And I think my next question is more around like the storage side of things, right? This being a Kubernetes Bytes podcast. Yeah. I know you mentioned that for the Airbyte deployment, you do create like an S3 bucket. But for applications that are deployed on Kubernetes, do you just use default storage that the cloud provider provides? And then how do you differentiate between applications that may need block storage or file storage? Because again, all of that is abstracted away from the user, but complexities that you still have to figure out under the covers to offer that simplistic experience to the end user.
Yeah. So we mostly use the default storage classes for staple applications. Where there is blob storage, we will use the cloud's native S3 or equivalent store. So that's honestly for operational simplicity. Mm-hmm. There probably are some weird use cases where like an on cluster Minaya would be more performant, and like we can help them out with that, but we wouldn't make that default in any reasonable world. That said, there are some customizations that you need to do, especially in AWS. So the default storage class in AWS EKS is not actually very good. They don't use the appropriate settings. So we will create, create a variety of different ones using different disk classes, and then we rewire the default. And we actually have an operator, the Plural operator, that has the ability to modify default storage classes. We basically express that as a CRD because the Kubernetes native way is actually very janky and weird. You have to like add that label to the storage class.
Yeah.
And then we use that. So I don't actually remember off the top of my head what the exact settings we use in AWS, but the default is actually higher cost and lower IOPS than another one that you can configure. So it just makes no sense.
Gotcha.
It makes sense for AWS though.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's true, because like you don't know what sort of hardware is underneath that. They probably are like desperate to get into other data centers, but they can't so that you never know if they're actually shooting themselves on their foot for that. The Equinix Metal setup is actually probably more interesting on that front. And that in that case, we use Ceph with Rook for the storage class. And we deploy MinIO to give blob storage. And then Rook is the storage class.
It gets
what gets block storage. One kind of cool thing with this, though, and I think people aren't fully appreciative of how powerful it is, but if you use a standard like EBS block store, EBS has pretty amazing redundancy. It's I don't know how many different ways it's replicated. It's at least three different ways. It has incredible reliability. And then if you just have like, even if you just had like a Postgres pod that's attached to that volume, Kubernetes natural restart capabilities is almost equivalent to having a read-write replica that has failover. Like the Kubernetes restart of that pod is going to happen just about as fast as the failover, if not faster. And it's gonna remount the disk. As long as the disk is as reliable as that failover would have been, you've effectively created technology equivalent to standard read-write replication. And I wonder if like at some point people will figure this out and start using Kubernetes and like really good block storage in replacement for some of these topologies that kind of don't make that much sense anymore.
Yeah.
But we'll see. The one caveat is, again, in AWS, AWS is just like a problem child in a lot of ways, but the disk isn't replicated across ACs.
Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and given sort of where Bob and I work in our day jobs, we've been sort of living that life and can tell you, you know, people are doing it. It's definitely, it is harder for some, especially I think maybe the individuals you're sort of working with who mm-hmm. want that sort of easier and not less complex, they're probably not thinking about like all those complexities of like, let me run my actual database on this thing, right? They're thinking, yeah. you know, deploy my application, connect it to my data, probably.
Yeah.
Right? That's a pretty typical answer that even we see living in this side of on the other side of it, I should say. But it sounds like, you know, for the most part, if someone wanted to deploy a database, you know, it sounds like Plural can, you know, connect it to a PVC, enable Helm to go provision those. Obviously, you know, it's less portable. You'd have to worry about moving your data if you wanted to kind of, you know, move that thing out, but that's not a new problem, right? So
makes sense.
Now does Plural allow you to also do sort of advanced things with that, you know, say they are provisioning a PVC that's on EBS, right? Can it take snapshots? Can it do those kind of like sort of more advanced data services in terms of backing up data and those kind of things, or is that sort of external or on the customer? Can you manage that through Plural as well?
Yeah. So the snapshot and backup restore, there's two different levels to this. So and this is kind of similar to the Kubernetes app level as well. We just use normal Kubernetes storage classes, and a lot of those actually have baked right. into Kubernetes the capability yep. to take snapshots. That's in the Kubernetes API. But there are certain applications where that's not really, you want to go further and beyond. So with a Postgres sure. database, the gold standard is point-in-time while replication based mm-hmm. restores. Yep. And so there's a lot of Postgres operator does have that capability. Mm-hmm. And we've used it many a time, actually, to back up and restore. It will continuously stream the wall into S3. We have some lifecycle policies around that S3 bucket to make sure that it doesn't explode in size to some obscene amount. And you can just specify a timestamp and restore your database to that timestamp, which is, again, a similar functionality you would get out of RDS. That's one of the big value props of RDS. The one difference, and actually we probably want to solve for this at some point, mm-hmm. RDS is point and click. So they have a very good user interface in front of you that you can just do it without having to read an API docs or anything like that. A lot of Kubernetes operators are not in that world yet. The reality is a lot of our users are, again, they aren't going to want to read that much detail in docs. Yep. They don't have the time for it. And to make this stuff more usable, you need a user interface in front. And so we'll want to like bake that into our console and make it more accessible.
Got it.
Gotcha. Thank you. And so like till this point, right, we have covered how day zero works, like how the deployment works, how all of these files are being auto-generated and things like that. How about day two operations? Like I know we discussed backup and snapshots right now, but what if I want to like perform or set auto-scaling rules just to make sure that my database is scaling up as my application needs more storage? Mm-hmm. Can that be done through Plural, or that's like an outside, out-of-the-box configuration?
Yeah, so the ideal way of doing all this would be via our console. So we want to make as much of this graphical as possible yep. for a similar reason why backup restore with the Solana Postgres operator has some accessibility issues. I sort of had mentioned this feature before, but the interactive runbook is our ideal experience for that. Mm-hmm. What it actually ultimately works as is it's a low code interface. There's actually an XML spec that allows you to configure the UI for each individual runbook, and you can make it look in all sorts of different ways. But there's mm-hmm. core building blocks like a time series, metrics, information, a table, input forms, and stuff like that to do complicated things. Almost all the applications that include a database, have a database runbook, and that database runbook includes, like, you know, adding another replica to the database, scaling its CPU and memories, and scaling its disk. And you can see all of the time series metrics for all of those inputs, so you can make an informed decision on all of them in one single flow. The other big day two operation, again, is upgrades, and that actually just happens naturally by you subscribing to the Plural catalog, mm-hmm. and we'll do the upgrades for you, and we'll test them and make sure that they're not going to blow anything off when they arrive, which can certainly happen. And then some of the stuff you have to dive a little bit deeper currently, but we'll work on making it a little bit better. But like cluster auto scaling is something you kind of mentioned there. Mm-hmm. We automatically configure the cluster with a diversity of node groups with different sizes. So like there'll be a set of nodes with like 2 CPU, 4 CPU, 8 CPU, and so forth. And there's also spot node groups in that set with Taint supplies, so you can have workloads accept a Taint and actually be provisional spot groups. And then there's a cluster autoscaler there. But the reality is sometimes that for various nuances of your workload, you might need to kind of reconfigure that setup and with a different topology and stuff like that. And that's a Terraform change. Documentation on that, but you just edit a Terraform file and then you'll have a slightly different node topology that might fit your use case a little bit better.
I think that's really cool, right? I know like AWS has this open source project called Carpenter, which does that spot-based node deployment, and it can help you mix and match instances. But having that plural, and does that apply across all the clouds, would be really cool.
Yeah. It, all the clusters are basically set up that way by default. The goal is like the autoscaling setup should be intelligent enough to give an optimal resource utilization for a very wide set of apps. Like if you think of the different things that can be deployed in a plural cluster, we're giving people the ability to point and click deploy an Airflow alongside an Airby with some superset. These are very different applications with different usage profiles. Yeah. So if you're going to build an autoscaling solution for it, it needs to be extremely flexible and have the capability to like handle really beefy workloads or really tiny workloads and all sorts of different things.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
God, it makes sense. Cool. We have a few time for a few more questions here. So I did want to dive into the security aspect a little bit before we move forward. And that's more or less like, you know, I've got a good sense of how Plural is kind of using managed Kubernetes. So I imagine in terms of, you know, the Kubernetes nodes themselves or control plane, you kind of rely on those things. But as far as the applications go, and maybe when CVEs crop up or, you know, vulnerabilities in libraries and, you know, Plural sort of managing the applications, how does Plural work with the customers on that?
Yeah, so all of the resources we publish, we also actually have a Docker registry in the Plural API. And everything, all the Helm charts, all the Terraform code, and all the Docker images are scanned. And you can actually see the scans in app.pluralsh at any given time. And there are actual CVEs in like a lot of these images.
Yeah, of course.
A lot of them are built on like, you know, the standard Ubuntu image that has a ton. They aren't like game breaking, but they exist. Yeah. A lot of the Python applications, Python just always has just a boatload of CVEs. It's just almost intrinsic in using Python. But you'll be able to see it. So that's observable. If there's something really, really bad, Grafana had a really bad vulnerability in one of its versions, actually. We'll see that also because we have that, and we'll publish a new version that alongside of their patch of it, and it will just go right into your cluster. You won't have to touch it. It's another automated deploy. There's some more things with security that's actually worth mentioning.
Yeah, please. Yeah,
the biggest one, I think, and we solve this really well, is authentication. And I think a lot of organizations do a really terrible job of authentication for their open source. So if you think of like what's happening inside Capital One, when they have individual teams that want to figure out how to deploy Airflow, you have one poor, like overworked engineer who has to figure out how to get Airflow set up at Capital One. He's going to take the shortest path possible. And that path is going to include a username, password authentication for that Airflow instance that's completely forgotten until the end of time. So like the reality is like a lot of these enterprises probably have completely unknown security exposure in terms at the authentication level for their entire open source estate. And they don't even know like the full extent of their open source estate. What Plural does is we have an integrated OIDC provider in Plural. We use Ori Hydra actually for it. And when you do an installation, you can just opt into using that OIDC provider to authenticate to the application. So that Airflow instance or that Airby instance would just have turnkey OAuth to your Plural account. And you can bind a user or a group of users directly to the application to provision or deprovision them to the application whenever you want. It's extremely, extremely low touch. You don't have to figure out in the docs of the application how to set up OIDC Connect. We've already done it for you, and you just have to press a button, basically. And that's really, really powerful. And it's also powerful because you can actually connect your enterprise SSO to Plural as well. So you can have SSO access to those applications via Plural. We just stand in the middle to sort of do all the heavy lifting for it. But that's another really big security aspect for the application. That's pretty important beyond just like the standard like CVE scanning stuff. In reality, that's probably a much bigger exposure than some low-level C library having a buffer. If you're being totally honest, and like a lot of enterprises do a really good job of fixing their low-level C libraries, and then they just have like all these poorly authenticated applications just littering around, and probably could like get who knows what. So
that's why the Palo Alto Networks stock has gone up the way it has over the past couple of years.
Probably.
This has been a great discussion, Michael. I think just as like the last or the closing question, right? I just wanted to ask, like, if people like Plural from this episode, where can they learn more about it? How can they get started? I think Plural is open source. So how can they access it and start using this in their environments?
Yeah, so you can visit our marketing website, www.pluralsh. That'll give you a high-level overview of all the stuff that we offer. You can create an account at app.pluralsh, and we'll give you a walkthrough of setting up your burst cluster. You can actually do it all in the browser. We have a Cloud Shell experience that will provision a local setup for your CLI. You just have to give us some cloud credentials to be able to do it, or you can actually use a GCP project that we create in our account for a 6-hour period of time just to test drive. You can also go to docs.pluralsh, and that has our full documentation of the platform and all of its functionality. And there's a quick start guide there. That's a great place to look. If you just want to dive more into it technically, that's awesome. Another thing, like, it's all open source. This project is not closed source at all. So you can see all of our code at github.com/pluralsh. Nice. And our main repo is github.com/pluralsh/plural. So if guys give us a star, that'd be amazing. But you can see how good or bad our code is and leave whatever criticism you have there as well.
And if you did remember any of these URLs, we'll have those in the show notes. So don't worry about like going back and noting them down.
Awesome.
Absolutely. And, it was a pleasure having you on the show. Will you be at, I know Bhavan won't be at KubeCon. Will you be at KubeCon EU this upcoming April?
I'm not sure about KubeCon EU. I was at KubeCon NA, and I'll be at the next KubeCon NA for sure.
Yeah.
We have my co-founder, Sam Weaver, is actually based in London, and he would be at KubeCon EU.
He'll be out there. Right.
So
go talk to Sam if you're in Amsterdam this coming April. I will be as well. I'll hunt down Sam and tell him what a great guest you were then.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm sure he'll appreciate it.
All right. Well, Michael, it was really a pleasure having on. I know I learned a lot, so I appreciate you having on, and maybe we can do it again in the future.
Yeah, sounds great. I really appreciated the opportunity.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, Bhavan, I think that conversation went really well. I know we've been trying to get Michael on the show for a long time, probably longer than he deserved, as I mentioned in the call. But it was great to have him on and talk about Plural. I really didn't know much about Plural at all until we started researching and talking to Michael. But what were your takeaways? What'd you get out of that?
No, I think Plural solves a good enough problem that exists in the ecosystem, right? Like deploying applications on top of Kubernetes is hard. If you just go to operatorhub.io, you will find like at least 5 different operators for any application that you want to deploy. And obviously you don't have the skill sets in-house to be experts and contribute to open source projects for all of these different applications that Plural has. So like having a tool like Plural that allows you to deploy applications from a curated app store or curated marketplace and then run it on top of EKS or AKS or GKE, bringing in that abstraction layer really helps. So as a data scientist, I know if you look at their website, one of the examples that they keep on using is Airbyte. So as a data scientist, if you want to deploy Airbyte, you don't even know how to run Kubernetes. You just go ahead, use the Plural CLIs, do a build, do a deploy, and it will automatically Like it would deploy all the resources using a combination of Helm charts, Kubernetes, manifests, and Terraform files as well. So I think I really like the abstraction layer that Plural brings to the ecosystem.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I agree with that wholeheartedly, but I also think that this trend that we keep seeing from many companies, many projects in the Kubernetes ecosystem of sort of focusing on the developer experience, the application owner experience, right? You know, some things that rang true for me with what he was saying is that a lot of our customers don't know Git. A lot of our customers aren't as technical and they don't want to manage or run Kubernetes. And I think now that we do see Kubernetes and a lot of the infrastructure or platform as table stakes offered in these cloud providers, and they work really well, you know, seeing this sort of transition to what can we build on top of all this, right, is I think a trend that we keep seeing. And I know I mentioned this a little bit where, you know, we had this world sort of with Heroku, but we didn't touch the infrastructure. And I use Heroku just because that's an example and sort of a platform I used back when I was deploying applications, you know, whether it was JavaScript or whatever, you just send it up there and it just worked. But now with Kubernetes, you have this mix of practitioner and infrastructure that they want that ease of use, but they also want to be able to touch it, right? And to be able to say, well, we'll do a lot for you and we'll give you a lot of the pieces and you don't have to, you know, be able to put your hands in it. But if you want to get your hands dirty, you want more flexibility, we do give you that operation. Yeah. And I think we've seen a couple different companies, you know, Cycle being one of them, you know, that give you a lot of that flexibility, but automate a lot of it on top of all the infrastructure. Yep. So that's really good. I think that's an interesting and neat trend that, you know, I take out of that conversation as one to really keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Great. So this is the end of today's episode and the end of the first episode of the new year. I hope everyone is glad we're back, hopefully. And, you know, we'll get another episode out for you soon. But with that, that is the end of today's episode. And I'm Ryan.
I'm Bhavan.
Thanks for joining another episode of Kubernetes Bytes.
Thank you for listening to the Kubernetes Bytes podcast.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.